Cross said on Friday that it hoped to be able to deliver much-needed aid to the besieged port city of Mariupol.
Unfortunately, Russian side didn't follow the agreement, and 45 buses were not allowed in to Berdansk. Berdansk is the city next to Mariupol.
Plus, those living in western Ukraine say that they are prepared for a long war with Russia.
We don't want these peace talks to end in an agreement that would be bad for Ukraine. We want to free our land, and for that, we are ready to fight until the end.
And later in the program, we speak to the Ukrainian viral sensation whose rendition of the song Let It Go enamored the world. Today is Friday, the 1st of April. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Miller. The Red Cross had intended to lead a humanitarian convoy to Ukraine's port city of Mariupol. The city mayor says that as many as 170,000 people remain trapped there with dwindling resources. The organization said on Friday that it had been barred from bringing aid in, but still had hope to be able to get there and subsequently evacuate civilians. A Red Cross spokesperson said that three cars carrying nine staff members were on their way to Mariupol. And earlier, I spoke with Anna Chernikova in western Ukraine, who's been following the story closely.
Unfortunately, Russian side didn't follow the agreement, and 45 buses were not allowed in to Berdansk. Berdansk is the city next to Mariupol. So neither humanitarian aid buses nor buses which should take people out are allowed in the city of Mariupol. However, 600 people managed to walk out from Mariupol today, and they reached the buses. So tomorrow in the morning, they will be going to Zaporizhia. More than 30 buses remain next to Berdansk, and they will be waiting for people tomorrow morning. For additional people, there is a hope that they might also manage to walk out from the city, because for the moment, there is very dangerous, even with private cars, to get out.
Anna, I also want to ask you about the fighting that's taking place throughout the country. Western intelligence has said repeatedly that it appears that Russian forces are repositioning to focus more on the Donbas. What can you tell us about the current state of what's taking place between Russian and Ukrainian forces throughout the country?
Yes, it looks like that Russians are moving towards eastern villages and eastern towns. For the moment, what we have is that a lot of villages and a lot of territories been taken by Ukrainian forces back in the Kyiv region and in Chernihiv region. So good news are coming from there, and civilians are posting, you know, messages and videos of Ukrainian forces coming in and how, you know, how happy they are proposing, you know, food and water to the soldiers. So it really looks like Russians are trying to concentrate on Donbas and Kharkiv regions at the moment. There are some unconfirmed yet information about very heavy battles in the Kharkiv region, and it might be that, again, we don't have any confirmations yet, but it looks like that there are much more forces, Russian forces there right now. So very heavy fighting are happening in the Kharkiv region. There are still heavy fighting in some places in Kyiv region, in some towns. So, for instance, the town of Irpin is now under Ukrainian control, but still there are fights. So not all the Russian soldiers are out. Chernobyl is freed from Russians as well.
You know, since the conflict has begun, President Zelensky has praised the efforts by not only the Territorial Defense Forces, but the Ukrainian military itself. In an address on Thursday evening, President Zelensky announced that he was firing two generals. What can you tell us about the rationale behind that and what it means?
Well, we all know that there are people, and we have confirmation of that, that in different regions there are officials who actually cooperate with Russian side. What President Zelensky announced that he is firing and he's there will be an investigation over two generals of the security service of Ukraine. Again, there is no details on that because President specified that there is no time now to concentrate on that and to get deep into details.
Anna Chernerkova is reporting for us from Western Ukraine. Anna, again, thank you very much for your reporting.
Thank you very much.
Ukraine says peace talks with Russia resumed on Friday using a video format after Tuesday's in-person meeting between Ukrainian and Russian delegations in Istanbul. Turkey is stepping up its diplomatic efforts to build on what it described as significant progress during Tuesday's talks. Dorian Jones takes it from here.
Ukraine's presidential office says Ukrainian and Russian officials held online peace talks Friday, but gave no further details. The meeting follows Tuesday's face-to-face peace talks in Istanbul, which both Turkish and Ukrainian officials described as positive. In a television interview Thursday, Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu, while acknowledging some Russian commitments to de-escalate in Ukraine remain unfulfilled, said efforts continue to build on Tuesday's meeting. Cavusoglu said, in the second stage, the necessary work is being carried out to bring together the foreign ministers. He said he texted Thursday with both Ukraine Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and conveyed Turkey's views on this issue to them, saying mediators will do whatever they can to make this happen. Last month, Turkey hosted a meeting between Kuleba and Lavrov, which ended in deadlock. But Lavrov, speaking Friday during a visit to India, said peace talks needed to continue and that they were preparing to reply to Ukrainian proposals made at Tuesday's Istanbul meeting. Lavrov, appearing to strike a positive note, said Kiev had shown much more understanding of the situation in Crimea and Donbas and demands for Ukraine's neutrality. Moscow annexed Ukraine's Crimea region by force and is calling for international recognition of the breakaway republics Donbas and Luhansk regions. But Kyiv insists it remains committed to retaining the country's territorial integrity. Cavusoglu has said there were convergences in those critical areas of dispute. Russian expert Samuel Bendit of the Center for Naval Analysis International Affairs Group says Turkey is now playing an increasingly important role in peace efforts.
Turkey is a significant actor here because the Russian president is talking to the Turkish president. The Ukrainian president is talking to the Turkish president. So Turkey is involved. It is in the know. And it could be potentially an important mediator if both sides feel it is time for Turkey to step up into that role.
Kyiv is looking to Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to use his influence on his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, to arrange a meeting with Ukraine's president. Kuleba reiterated his call Friday for a presidential summit. For now, however, Moscow insists such a meeting is only possible once there are tangible proposals to resolve the conflict. Russian oligarch Roman Abramovich also appears to be playing a growing role in peace efforts, attending Tuesday's Istanbul talks, with Cavusoglu saying Abramovich is making sincere efforts to end the war. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The head of the International Atomic Energy Agency said on Friday that the departure of Russian forces from the decommissioned Chernobyl power plant is a step in the right direction, and that the UN nuclear watchdog plans to be there very, very soon. Meanwhile, China is accusing the United States of instigating the war in Ukraine and is criticizing NATO. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma has that story.
Beijing says NATO should have been disbanded following the breakup of the Soviet Union. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson says the U.S. has led NATO to engage in five rounds of eastward expansion in the last two decades, adding the number of NATO members has increased from 16 to 30 as the alliance has moved eastward toward the Russian border. While China says it's not taking sides in the Ukraine conflict, it's declared a no-limits partnership with Moscow and has refused to condemn the invasion. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
In Western Ukraine, locals say despite ongoing peace talks between Russia and Ukraine, they are prepared for a long war. They say they will not accept a peace agreement that includes ceding territory to Russia, even if their leaders can eventually make a deal. VOA's Heather Murdoch continues our coverage.
Here in Ternopil, a western Ukrainian city packed with displaced families, aid workers are preparing food, clothes, and other necessities for local war victims and to send to the east, where battles still rage despite ongoing peace talks. Many say they don't want a peace deal that means giving up land to Russia, and they are preparing to live in a country at war for months or even longer.
We don't want these peace talks to end in an agreement that would be bad for Ukraine. We want to free our land, and for that, we are ready to fight until the end.
Religious leaders in the area echo the popular sentiment, but they worry about the devastating impact the war has already had on Ukrainian fighters and civilians, including millions who have fled their homes.
War is about chaos and ruin. In the same way cities get ruined, a person gets destroyed inside. After you come back from the war, you can't be the same person.
Major cities in the east now appear abandoned in places, and western cities, like Lviv, are overflowing with displaced people, many separated from their loved ones.
My daughter and grandchildren are in Slovakia. My older daughter is in Kyiv, and me and my son-in-law are here in Lviv.
She says she hopes the war will end soon because Lubava, who preferred not to provide her last name, like so many other farmers, needs to start planting soon if she is to harvest this year. Aid workers in Ternopil say they fear Ukraine could become frozen in an endless war. And while they may reject the idea of giving up Ukrainian land, some volunteers say they still support peace talks.
You always need to speak. Intelligent people should talk because human nature is designed so people can communicate. This is why we need to do everything we can to make a ceasefire.
He says when leaders negotiate, it mitigates the amount of violence on the ground. But other clergy warn that if a deal is reached, it will only be valuable if people keep the promises made in the pact. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Ternopil and Lviv, Ukraine.
Australia said on Friday that it will send armored vehicles to Ukraine after President Volodymyr Zelensky made a plea for much-needed military aid during an address to the Australian Parliament. Phil Mercer is up next.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told lawmakers in Australia by video link Thursday from Ukraine that those fighting against evil must be armed. He urged Australia to send Bushmaster armoured personnel carriers that are made by a French company, Thales, in the Victorian city of Bendigo. They're built to carry up to 10 soldiers safely through conflict zones. They have extensive ballistic protection and a V-shaped floor, designed to disperse the blast of explosive devices more effectively than a conventional flat floor. Defence Minister Peter Dutton said Friday that planning for the deliveries is underway, although Australian officials haven't confirmed how many vehicles would be sent or when.
We're doing work on just logistically how we would get the bushmasters there in the numbers that they need. Even on one of the huge planes, you can probably only put three, maybe four. Normally we'd put them on a ship and they could sail, but I just don't think we've got those sort of timelines. So we're very, very much open to the request.
Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison has denounced Russia's brutal, illegal and unjustified invasion of Ukraine. Australia has already sent missiles and humanitarian supplies to Ukraine, now about a month into a war with Russia. Canberra has imposed sanctions on hundreds of Russian politicians, military commanders and business people. It will now impose a 35% tariff on imports from Russia and Belarus. Morrison called the steps the largest ever imposition of sanctions by Australia against a single country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Russia is currently undertaking a number of diplomatic efforts, speaking to Ukraine to halt the hostilities and visiting other countries like China to bolster relations as the West continues to isolate Moscow. Matt Pauley is an assistant professor of history at Michigan State University in East Lansing, I began our conversation by asking him for his assessment of Russia's latest moves.
So I don't believe that Russia at this point is sincerely committed to a peace negotiation process, right? It is continuing to inflict severe harm to Ukrainian cities, continuing to bomb, in fact, areas around Kyiv or to the north of Kyiv, in particular the city of Chernihiv, and is stepping up pressure in the south, southeastern part of the country. So it seems to be engaged in ongoing military operations despite this initial declaration that it would be pulling back from Kyiv and pursuing peace with some greater amount of commitment. So it does seem to be like Russia is trying to buy time to distract the world from its war efforts in Ukraine. And I just think that it is difficult to negotiate with an adversary that started a war without cause and does not really believe that Ukraine is a real place from Vladimir Putin's perspective.
Speaking of that, Matt, so I guess the question I have for you is looking at the broader picture. How does Europe, the United States, and other countries move forward in dealing with Russia? After all, President Putin, on the eve of the invasion, detailed his worldview. And in fact, he, as you said, did not give credence that Ukraine was a country. He shared what some have called an imperial view of Russia. So how do you move forward?
Well, I guess I'd say a few things, right? Certainly, this is not about the construction of the reconstruction of the Soviet Union. You quite rightly underscored his imperial ambitions. That's how I see it. It's a return to the Russian Empire and not to the Soviet Union. In the short term, Europe and the United States, the transatlantic community, have to keep up the pressure on Russia regardless of what the outcome of these peace negotiations are, right? Until there's a clear withdrawal of Russian forces from Ukrainian territory, and frankly, I would suspect some notion of reparations to the Ukrainian government, sanctions have to be kept in place, and Europe has to prepare to wean itself from this energy dependence on Russia. I do not think this ends well for Russia. As I've remarked in the past, I don't see a situation where Russia's security is improved by this, right? Say Russia wins this conflict in the short term, I definitely believe that a part of Ukraine will continue the fight and will create instability in whatever part of Ukraine is occupied by Russia. And that's far from a certainty at this point. The Ukrainians have been quite remarkable in their defense of Ukrainian territory and, in fact, their willingness to engage in counteroffensive against Russian troops. So we may see more Ukrainian territory liberated, but we just don't know what sort of capacity Russia is willing to again throw at Ukraine.
And what about NATO?
There's no doubt that that NATO is going to renew its commitment to its eastern border member states, Poland, Romania, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. And that will present Russia with a security problem anew. So at least from the Russian perspective, I think things will remain insecure. And an insecure Russia is, of course, something to be suspicious of.
Matt Pauley is a professor at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
7-year-old Emilia Anisovich melted hearts around the world when she sang the hit Disney song Let It Go from the movie Frozen when she was seeking safety in a bomb shelter. VOA's Miroslava Gonganze caught up with the young girl and her family in Poland, where they're living as refugees.
when 7-year-old Amelia started singing in a bomb shelter in Kyiv, the crowded and noisy underground room where people were hiding from Russian shelling felt completely silent. Filmed and posted by the neighbor named Martha, the video of Amelia singing a song from the Disney film Frozen went viral almost instantly.
They liked it a lot. They all applauded. They were giving me high fives.
Amelia tells me this story in a peaceful park near Poland's capital, where we met with her mother, Lilia, and grandmother, Vera. Feeding the birds at the lake, Amelia recalled to me how she used to feed the ducks in Ukraine, and how when the war started, she often went to the bomb shelter and had to watch her every step because of the possible landmine along the way. Her mother, Lilia, recalled when she decided to leave Kyiv.
When Amelia started to be afraid to come to the windows, and when we would leave home to go to the shelter and then back because we would go to the bomb shelter at night, she would ask me at every step, can she take the step and if it's safe? At that point, I realized it is the end. It is the line. If I cross it and we will stay in Kyiv, she will become psychologically damaged. She will become a child who is afraid of her own shadow.
Amelia remembers the crowded train ride out of Kyiv.
Some people stood up, some people sat down, slept on the floor at the train station. Me too. They gave us a soft mattress.
The family says people treat them well here in Poland. The family of four lives for free in a home outside of Warsaw. Amelia and her 15-year-old brother Misha can attend school here, but their mother is hoping they will be able to go home soon.
I was hoping to come here for a few weeks. Now I understand it could be longer, but I have the capacity to hope it will be only for a few months. I'm afraid to imagine it could be longer. It doesn't matter how good and safe it is here. I feel foreign. I'd like to go home. I would like to see my husband. I am afraid for my family. I really hope that someone will hear my prayers and the prayers of thousands and millions of people, and I will be home soon.
And Amelia says she feels like she's growing up fast. The child appears unusually composed as she talks about her homeland.
We have to speak Ukrainian, not Russian, because our enemy speaks Russian. Our land is in Ukraine. We have to speak Ukrainian. We have war in Ukraine. Russia is attacking us. I am afraid for my family. My dad is there, my grandfather, my grandmother. I am afraid for all of them. Many kids have already died, and I would like to live very much, and other kids would like to live.
Amelia's mother and grandmother are trying to maintain a sense of normality for her and her older brother. Last year, Amelia started going to school in Kyiv. Now a refugee, she resumes her studies in this small town near Warsaw. The family hopes the war will end and they will return soon. For now, little Amelia is using her talent and newfound fame, singing at charity concerts around Poland. And she is raising a lot of money to help Ukraine. Slava Gungadze, Voice of America, Warsaw, Poland.
And that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine, as well as news and events from around the world, 24 hours a day at voanews.com and on our social media platforms. Just be sure to follow at VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you very much for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe. And good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.